migra. 80 miles north de La Baja.
This is the Women's Union National League for Peace and Freedom show on WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on your FM dial or streaming from WCOMFM.org.
Is our thirsty sigh. Dame Agua is a desert cry. We are coyotes, Lord, on the devil's road. Plastic jug holds muddy water. Marking the way of the devil's slaughter. A backpack, a sandal, his legacy. North of the border of Mexico. If he slipped through the gate of the Gold North Tower.
With a little introduction from Tom Nielsen, this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, the Wake Up Call, and I'm Dick Paddock, co-host, and sitting across from me is Lori Hoyt, who's our other co-host, and we should let you know that we're going to be able to accept calls today. And we have a call-in line, area code 919-246-9639. That's 919-246-9639. So we'll go ahead, and we're talking today to Christina Cowger of Stop Torture Now, North Carolina, or is it?
Yes, North Carolina, North Carolina, Stop Torture Now.
Okay.
And we're very glad that you're here, Christine. Our fellow, our sister Wilf member, Peggy Mish, has been involved with Stop Torture Now, I think, from the very beginning, and has really kept Wilf, the Women's International League, informed of what's going on and asked for our help on occasion. It's been a few years, but I have been out at Smithfield when there's been protests for the Arrow, which I won't go – okay, I want to – so we're going to talk about North Carolina, what – how it got started, what it's about, and we'll go from there. So, Christine, you fill us in.
Sure.
So for listeners who don't know and should know, you're going to find out.
Yes, indeed. Peggy Mish definitely was there from the beginning, as were several other activists who are still very much involved. So in 2005, the New York Times published a major investigative article about the fact that the CIA was relying on a small aviation company in Smithfield, North Carolina, really a CIA front called Arrow Contractors. The way it was relying on it was as a major domestic hub of the CIA's rendition aviation program. So the article demonstrated how aircraft that are based in North Carolina at the public airport in Johnston County, and at that time also at the Kinston Jetport at the Global Transpark in Kinston. These aircraft would take off with pilots and crews who are from North Carolina, would stop at Dulles Airport to pick up a CIA snatch team, specially trained team, and then would fly over the Atlantic, refueling in one country or another, and its destination would be a country, one of about 50 countries worldwide, that was secretly cooperating with the CIA to pick up, to detain, and then to hand over to the CIA people who were accused of terrorism. There was a huge dragnet occurring globally in the years after 9/11. The CIA and the other U.S. agencies were under tremendous pressure to show results in the war on terror. The kind of results they wanted to show was large-scale rounding up of Muslim men who could be credibly accused of involvement in terrorism or who perhaps were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and then holding those people secretly and squeezing them to see if any information would come out. So these aircraft based in North Carolina, these were essentially foot soldiers, if you will, in this global program of secret detention and then transporting people to other countries where they could be held indefinitely with no access to their family or a lawyer or the International Red Cross. No one knew where these detainees were. They had disappeared. And where they disappeared to were, in the beginning, third country prisons, such as in Lebanon or Syria or Egypt, where security forces close to the United States took custody of these men secretly again and interrogated them using brutal methods, using tortures, that the United States could then disavow. So it was essentially interrogation and torture by proxy.
Mm-hmm. Mission Impossible. We'll disavow you. The Secretary will disavow you.
It was considered also expeditious, if convenient, if you will, because the CIA itself didn't have the capacity for large-scale detention or really for interrogation of dozens or hundreds of detainees. They weren't set up for that. Now, in 2004, they actually earlier than that in Thailand, for a brief period of time, they had a black site, a secret CIA facility in Thailand, where they did the waterboarding, the dozens of waterboarding sessions with Abu Zubaydah, one of the accused masterminds of 9/11.
183, if I remember the number.
Mm-hmm. What?
183.
I think that's right. So the Thai government became upset. We've learned that from the Senate torture report, which was released in December. And due to the Thai protests, that black site was shut down after those sessions. And other secret black sites for the CIA were opened up in Poland, Romania, Lithuania, Afghanistan, and Cuba. So there were, I think it was 8 or 9 CIA black sites where their so-called high-value detainees were held and interrogated, and some other people, too, who were suspected of involvement in terrorism. A number, most of whom were actually then later let go due to lack of evidence. But it was at these black sites where the CIA directly interrogated people using techniques that had been developed since World War II and particularly relying on psychological torture, on multiple simultaneous tortures, on waterboarding, on stress positions, forced nudity, extremes of temperature, extreme loud music that is forced into your ears 24 hours a day, permanent darkness, things that especially together, all together, were demonstrated to be able to disintegrate and break down people's personalities.
So I'm surprised. So the Thailand government, why were they upset at what was being done or that their people were finding out word it was... I mean, I'm surprised. It's so nice to hear about some government being upset about these methods.
I think they thought that it might make Thailand look bad.
Yeah. Well, good for them. They have some sense of shame, you know, which has been very hard for our country to have, even with the recent reports, you know, for the Senate. It's still not really having the kind of effect we would hope it would have.
Yeah, I don't know how much to make out of the Thais' objections. They did later allow the CIA to more informally use a portion of their international airport in Bangkok to torture and interrogate additional detainees. only that wasn't a formal black site, and so it's not covered in the Senate torture report.
Yeah.
But there were a series of at least two Libyan dissidents against Muammar Gaddafi's regime, who were held at the airport and tortured by the CIA before being rendered back to Libya and handed over to their arch enemies, the Gaddafi intelligence force. So just to make a point, I'm not, you know, we should be cautious in how we interpret Thai objections.
Yeah, that's a, but I just thought, God, is this a little bright spot? I mean, what is, to me, as horrifying or almost as horrifying as our government doing this, which for many of us was a shock as this began to be revealed. We're still capable, at least back then, of being shocked. But how widespread? You mentioned 50 countries. I mean, it was such collusion with so many countries that to be willing to do this, I mean, that's horrifying right there. You know, like, I I'm a child growing up in the Second World War. I was 11 when it was ending. And so grew up with these movies about these horrible Nazis who did, you know, these beating of people and terrifying people. And this is before even we knew about the killings in the concentration camps. Just even just how horrible these people were, the Japanese, that they would torture people. And so our guys were always coming in, you know, with the flag and we're the good guys. And I guess it's hard to let go of that. We want to think of ourselves as the good guys. And I think this was really horrifying that we would, you know, they would try to say it's a few bad apples. But, you know, then it became very clear that this was absolutely systematic. It was planned. It was, you know, and as each little piece got revealed, it was like more and more sickening. You know, it was just no way to say it's just a few bad apples anymore at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I think the important part about the what is called the retention, the rendition, detention, and interrogation program (RDI) that the CIA developed in the post 9/11 period is that it was reviewed and authorized, and in some cases orchestrated and monitored and overseen directly by the principals in the national security cabinet of President Bush, so Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and the Attorney General were all part of dozens of meetings where the tortures that were being carried out on detainees were discussed in detail.
Yeah, and that Attorney General tried to find all these legal rationales to say, "Oh, this really is okay." It's so scary. It could happen again. I mean, and I think by the fact that not one person has gone to prison for it, except a few lower level people, nobody has really had hardly their hands slapped. Dick Cheney is still going around saying he saved the country by doing that.
Right.
And he'd do it again in a heartbeat or something.
Is that sort of braggadocious? So that's why I was so happy to hear somebody even had any bit of shame that is, you know, in this dark story to think, oh, somebody, you know, is embarrassed at least by this, let alone being horrified or... So it's very
I think it's important to say that the struggle for accountability is an international one, and there are people working in the United Kingdom and in Poland to try to hold their governments to account for the ways they cooperated with the CIA. So, for example, in the United Kingdom, there are a number of the detainees who were rendered to torture in joint operations by MI6, which is sort of like the CIA of the United Kingdom, and the CIA, those joint operations, now people are suing the British government, attempting to get redress for the UK's role in their renditions. So those are people from Libyan dissidents, for example, who were rendered in those joint operations. So hopefully that will begin to uncover some, not only of MI6's role, but also of the role that the CIA played. And the U.S. has placed intense pressure on the British government not to reveal information about what the United States did in those missions.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, yeah, and we were talking at the beginning before we came on the air about Amy Goodman's show. She had a segment today. And I wish I'd taken notes because I can't give the name of the lawyer, or I think she was with the Center for Constitutional Rights. She was with some group that is providing pro bono lawyers for detainees, trying to get them freed from Guantanamo. And so there's an article in Harper's about what they were talking about today, which was about a father and a son who were both imprisoned. They had fled Afghanistan when we were going to be bombing them, and as they went over the border into Pakistan, they got arrested. Probably one of these things where people get turned in to make money. And so they got, after rendered to three or four prisons, they finally ended up at Guantanamo, and they were a few cells down from each other. So it was the son was only 17 or 18 when this happened, a teenager, and they no charges have ever been filed on them. But he took comfort from his father was the next cell or a couple cells down, and they could call to each other when they wanted to break them and have him give whatever information they wanted that he didn't have to give. They punished him by removing his father from any proximity. So he has never seen his father now for many years. And so they were in there for some years. The son got released a year before the father, and Portugal, I think, agreed to take him. But even upon release, he is hemmed in by travel restrictions. You know, they've never cleared his name of being an enemy combatant. It's very hard for him to rebuild his life. He's still under this cloud. And then his father, a year later, was also freed, no charges, and put on some island, Cape Verde or someplace, some island. They are not allowed to see each other. Now, the son has been able, I think the mother's been able to visit him, or you know, some things like that, but they are both under, and it's the U.S. government who made this contract with both of these places, so they are still under our thumb and still being punished, although they haven't done anything or never any charge about them. And that was so, you know, with all the more horrific things, there's something so painful and chilling about, after all these years, they've been out 4 or 5 years now, that we can't let go. We can't say, gee, we made a mistake. You know, let me give you a hand in rebuilding your life, or at least let me get out of your way so you can rebuild your life. And so, you know, that was just so sad. So it's an article in Harper's, I guess, in this month. So look for it, everybody. And I was knowing we were going to have you on for the show today, Christine, about North Carolina stop torture now. You know, it's still such a pertinent issue. It's still happening, and people are still suffering. And I remember the German fellow that we rendered, El Masri, I think. And I think he did try to sue our government. He said he was a broken person. He underwent such psychological and physical torture that just even talking about it in this one documentary, he broke down. It was quite a, you know, and they realized they made a mistake. So do they apologize? No, they dump him out in the countryside in another country, Macedonia. He was German. And just leave him there. I mean, it's just grotesque.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's just grotesque.
Now, El Masri is a good example of somebody who was very damaged by his experience, and so much so that he went on to have, you know, essentially a broken life, a life of conflict with a shopkeeper and then a mayor, and so he spent time in jail, in prison, in Germany for minor assault charges. Somebody whose mental health was deeply damaged.
Yeah.
And who knows how different his life might have been after the rendition if the United States had owned up to what it did and had acknowledged its mistake and had offered him a sincere apology and some kind of restitution.
And some kind of restitution to rebuild his life. I mean, you know, that's like an example where we've seen him in documentaries and seen that he's been broken. I mean, they say that they've developed these techniques to disintegrate a person's personality so that they will give any information that's wanted. The other sad, ironic thing is this information has come out now that the FBI was getting all the information by building rapport with prisoners, that they were able to get more information than ever was gotten from these torture methods. You know, it's just that, I mean, that's it. It's, and then they tried to say, you know, about how they saved us a few times, and then that was investigated, and it was a bunch of hooey. As my mom would say, hooey.
I think we shouldn't underestimate this need for acknowledgement and apology that you're talking about. That's, you know, in some ways the most important aspect of this from the point of view of the survivors, of whom there are dozens. The Senate report had a list of 119 people that the CIA held at one of its black sites. But that doesn't count all the other people who were rendered to other countries and who were never formally held at a black site of the CIA but were tortured by other governments at the behest of the CIA.
I thought
so the
that seemed like
higher.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that the Senate report is only a partial accomplishment of what needs to happen, which is a complete reckoning of all the people who were subjected to disappearance removal and secret detention on behalf of the CIA.
Right, and all the people who were involved in doing it, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we need a historical record. It would be so important so that, you know, this can build up more and more, and maybe they will finally, even if Dick Cheney's 85 years old with a total artificial chest, you know, and heart, that there may be some accountability, at least public acknowledgement,
right,
more than has occurred.
And yet Cheney is perfectly willing to acknowledge it, so.
No, he doesn't acknowledge he did anything wrong.
He doesn't acknowledge that it was wrong, but he acknowledges that he did what he did.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the big abdication really has been under President Obama's administration, this idea that the United States should only look forward and should not look back at this record of torture.
How can you look to where you're going until you know where you've been?
Yeah, right. And President Obama, having tons of support from liberals and progressive people in the United States, was able to really defuse the mass awareness of the need for accountability and taking responsibility for torture, because he was silent on the issue for many years, sending a message that we don't talk about this. He said explicitly we're only going to look forward and not backward, which sent a message that there would be no accountability for officials from the Bush administration. And most recently when he said, well, we tortured some folks, which he had to say because the Senate torture report was in the process of being released, he then went on to say why it happened and why it was necessary, that it was the fog of war and 9/11 and that people were under pressure, as if really to excuse the resort to systematic torture.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So what has happened is that Cheney, as you say, has been beating the drum to justify his own involvement in torture, his authorship of torture. President Bush has said he would do it again. And you've had nothing as a counterweight. You've had no high-level Democratic officials who have come out and said, this is unacceptable.
Yeah. So you're willing to do it, and you're willing to acknowledge that you did it. Everybody else, or you know, a very large number of people, probably the vast majority of the people in the world, think that you have committed war crimes. Are you ready to go to trial?
Right, of course not. I mean, Cheney and Bush and Condoleezza Rice and Rumsfeld are all banking on the promise that Obama has made that there will be no investigation yeah. leading to prosecution.
So he made, you know, I kind of didn't agree with it, but I understood his first year in office because it could have looked like, oh, I've won and I'm being vindictive, you know, or revengeful. I could see him going a little slow at the beginning. He was new and not into politics for that long, and I think inexperienced. So I just thought he needs time to like sort of catch his breath and get a sense of his own power. And the biggest disappointment is that he just has stayed mired in that Pollyannish. I believe in being an optimistic person, but at the same time, you know, to not call people to account for something that has so damaged our reputation, has so damaged our standing in the world. I see Dick getting ready for yeah. ready for a station break. We'll take a break. We take a station break, Christine, and then we'll be coming back.
I want to remind you that you can call in if you have any questions or comments. The number is 919-246-9639. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, the wake-up call, and we are brought to you over the facilities of WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro, broadcasting here from the Arts Center in Carrboro, right across from our longtime one and only underwriter, Internationalist Bookstore at 101 Lloyd Street, behind the blue door, which I can see as I sit here. And we'd be very glad for you to go over there and get involved. And we are.
Or even just go and meet them and look around. It's such a cool yeah. place, and it's a wonderful community center where you know anything that's going on. They have flyers and posters, and especially if you're new to either activism or new to the community, it's a great way to kind of know what's happening and meet some really nice people.
Right.
Yeah, and there's a lot of young people. Hang out there. It's really
right.
fun.
And we are the Triangle Women's International League for Peace and Freedom chapter.
Yes, we are.
You can go to our website, which is triangle.wilpf.org. You can go to the one for Internationalist Books if you would like to do that. It's internationalistbooks.org. And WCOMFM.org is the website for the radio station.
Yes, and all of us are volunteer run. That's our gift of love to the community. We're all volunteers, WCOM, the Internationalist Books, and WILF. And we really ought to start letting people know that we are approaching, actually it's this year, is our 2015 is our 80th birthday year, our birthday. It's our 80th year in this community for our local chapter. And the international, national WILF, it's going to be the 100th year anniversary, started by that wonderful activist, Jane Addams, who is a lot of you remember her name from school. She was the first, I guess, sort of like social worker. And work with immigrants, all the things that we're still working on today, immigration, and particularly about peace. It was started during the beginning of the First World War, and Jane Addams and some other intrepid American women braved going across the ocean, even though there were torpedoes even back then in 1915, and met with women from all the other countries, even the countries that were at war with each other, and tried to meet with all the heads of state to talk about mediation instead of bloodshed of their fathers, their sons, their brothers. And they were as we know, unfortunately, unsuccessful. It was one of the bloodiest wars that had up until that time. Total slaughter. But they found it was so good to be together, even women wanting to work together for peace, even when their countries were at war. So that's how Wolf got started, and we're still working on it. And we still always have hope that sometime, somewhere, these power-hungry people will realize that there's other ways to work things out rather than slaughtering each other.
Right.
Let's hope and pray. Yeah. So,
I have an announcement for behalf of the radio station.
Okay.
Hickory Tavern, which is right behind me.
Right
here.
Yeah.
Near the Art Center.
Right across the parking lot.
It's going to host a fundraiser for the radio station.
When?
Again, it's May 7th.
Okay.
And it will be, let's see here. The Hickory Tavern is located inside the Hampton Inn here in Carrboro at 370 East Main Street. And it will host a fundraiser for your community radio station. That's ours, actually. WCUMLP on Thursday, May 7th, 2015, from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. 10% of food sales totals from receipts deposited will be donated to WCOM, nonprofit all-volunteer community radio station. And
so please go,
right,
because WCOM was like the internationalist, and like probably Stop Torture Now, and like Wilf, you know, we all are operating on shoestrings.
Right. And so you can be assured that whatever you spend over there, 10% will come to the radio station on that day. And you can also make actual straight-up donations if you
like. That's always good.
And they're still, and they're tax-deductible.
Yes.
501c3. So,
okay.
You're in good shape. Unfortunately, it will be after tax day, so you won't see your advantage right away, but it will be there.
Okay.
And so please come to our fundraiser on May 7th.
Okay.
At the Hampton Inn.
Sounds good. And now we want to get back to our guest, Christine Calgar. Am I pronouncing that right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's here. She's with North Carolina Stop Torture Now, which now that started back in 2005?
That's right, yeah.
So how did in North Carolina, how do we find out about this arrow? Is it because of the New York Times article, or did we find out some other way about that being a CIA facility?
We found that out from the New York Times article.
That's how we found out.
One of the authors of that article, Stephen Gray, also wrote a book called Ghost Plane, which was
widely read.
So he had put together the crucial pieces, which were the flight logs, showing where the aircraft originated and where they went overseas, that matched up then with the accounts by detainees who had escaped of what had happened to them and when they had moved from point A to point B. So that's how he and other human rights investigators put together the puzzle and figured out that aero contractors, and then subsequently there were other airlines identified as well, were working for the CIA.
Mm-hmm. So here we are thinking of North Carolina being, you know, out of all that bad guy stuff. Here we are, nice, beautiful North Carolina, and here right on our way down to the coast is this very innocuous, you can't see anything, tell anything, you know, just a little airfield.
Right. North Carolina has other connections to CIA renditions, too. It seems that there's an airline a company in Fayetteville based at the airport there called Centurion Aviation that played some role in helping the CIA with the detentions at the black sites. We don't know exactly what, but they are in the same town as the Joint Special Operations Command, which is the wing of the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
That brings together the different branches in covert operations. So it would make sense that the Joint Special Operations Command would be involved with the Extraordinary Rendition Program, perhaps supplying muscle security details or some other similar role. Blackwater, also, as you know, is a company that was based in North Carolina for quite a while.
That's right. I'm blocking all that out.
Yeah. So they used to be based at Moyauk, which is up in the far northeast corner of North Carolina, out in a beautiful marshy area of the state, and they did a lot of training and exercises up there, essentially mercenaries that they provided. They worked very closely with the CIA on the rendition, detention, and interrogation program. And another article in the New York Times described them as coming to see themselves as kind of an extension of the agency in that program for a period of years. So there are ways that North Carolina has been involved very heavily in CIA business that most of the citizens of our state are still not familiar with. And one of the things that we're proposing to do, because our government has systematically refused to be transparent and to conduct an investigation or to put a stop to this or even declare a policy against it, we're proposing to have a non-governmental commission of inquiry in North Carolina so that prominent people from different walks of life, different political persuasions who agree that we don't want North Carolina involved in torture could come together, examine the record, put together a formal account of how our state has been involved, and then come up with recommendations on how the state of North Carolina could ensure we don't do this again. How do we avoid being used by a secret government agency for immoral human rights policies using our public infrastructure, our public airports, without the taxpayers' knowledge but at our expense?
Wow. So is this your group is spearheading this?
It's not the same as North Carolina Stop Torture Now. It's a different entity. And it's just getting off the ground, and it has support from a number of prominent academics and attorneys and politicians. But, you know, we need to reach out more broadly and involve more different kinds of people in it. So retired military officers, for example.
Yeah.
So this is, in some sense, like a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
That's the idea. You know, the reconciliation part, I think, is too far off for us to really have a clear picture of that, because reconciliation implies that the victims have an opportunity to hear from the perpetrators and to confront them. It's really a truth commission, and there is already a lot of information in the public record. There's information that's not yet, and so the commission could invite testimony from people who have knowledge that they haven't shared. It can also invite testimony, public testimony, from victims of extraordinary rendition who are barred from entering the United States, which they all are, but who could testify by Skype or in some other manner from overseas. And we know several of them, and we know that what they want and what they expressly state is that they want a formal recognition by the United States of what it has done to them and a formal acknowledgement and apology and some kind of restitution. So even though this wouldn't be a government body, it's a non-governmental commission that we're able to convene, it would still provide, hopefully, the kind of visible recognition of what has happened to these people that would help to both give them some sense of their, you know, their cases are known about, people in the United States care about this, and also spur our government to do what it ought to do. That's the idea. It doesn't take the place of the state of North Carolina dealing with its own record here. I mean, we have, going back to 2006, teams of human rights advocates, people of faith, veterans, activists in the peace movement have met with Governor Easley, not the governor himself, but top staff to Governor Easley, to Governor Perdue, and to Attorney General Cooper. Several meetings, reams of documentation handed over. Our state's involved. We need an investigation. We have a duty. You state officials have a duty to ensure that crimes are not being committed using our state facilities or our county facilities. We've gone before the Johnston County Commissioners probably dozens of times to ask them to have a policy at their airport of not allowing torture flights to emanate from it. All of these state officials, without exception, have refused to do anything, including even just make a public statement, even a statement of policy.
Wow.
We don't agree with torture. We don't condone torture. if the federal government is using our state facilities for torture, we don't agree with that. So we've asked the Attorney General for that several times. We've asked three governors now. Governor McCrory got a letter in December that neither he nor his chief of staff has even returned a phone call about. That's what a hot potato this is. So now that Attorney General Cooper is contemplating a run for governor, and it seems likely that he will be a prominent candidate for governor of North Carolina, I think it's important for North Carolinians to be asking him hard questions like, what about transparency? Does your government believe in open and transparent acknowledgement of the ways that the state has been involved with international human rights violations?
Wow, that is so discouraging. I mean, you know, we're talking at every level of government. The federal government is saying, let's move forward, let's not think about it. You know, the people are under pressure. Gosh. And now, you know, when you think about the state, and I remember attempts back when I was more involved a few years back, and there was a civil where people
went into civil
disobedience. We had a court thing. Mm-hmm. Quite a few Wilf members. Nine, 10, 11 people. I remember Francis Coyle. Remember that, Dick? Mm-hmm. Were you one of them?
No.
You weren't at that point? And wanted to get, you know, in court to get word out. And just deaf ears. I remember them going to the Johnson County Commissioners, you know, just total silence.
Right.
And I didn't realize about each of the governors.
Well, that's what happens
when. So it's bipartisan.
It's bipartisan.
Bipartisan amnesia.
Yes.
Bipartisan.
Head in the sand.
Moral turpitude, is that a good word? You know, used in another situation. But, you know, where they just, I don't know what kind of fear. Is it just that they don't want to? What would be the reason for the state when they, you know, they haven't authorized it? I mean, what do they feel they're at risk for?
I think that's a good question. I believe that they understand that it's the CIA at work. Aero Contractors is a front for the CIA. The CIA is operating with the knowledge of the highest levels of the United States government. And President Obama has expressly given them a pass, has said that he's not going to hold them to account. So I believe that the state and county officials are sheltering under that official unwillingness to take responsibility.
You don't think they're afraid the CIA will come and get them, do you think, if they speak up? I mean, the CIA, they're pretty good at terrorizing, but I can't imagine that a governor would be afraid like that.
No, I don't think that physical fear is the issue. I think
The
level of governor, it's their perception that there is more for them to lose in federal disapproval than there is to gain in local honesty, local support. They're not willing to buck a policy of the federal government when it comes to a federal agency doing clandestine operations using their facilities. For whatever reasons. I mean, we haven't obviously made it difficult enough for them yet.
That's true. And you can say, well, maybe they're afraid of federal dollars being held back for different projects or whatever. But what about the Johnson County Commissioners, for God's sake, you know?
They get federal transportation money at that airport, but it's also good to know the CIA is their largest tenant. They bring in thousands of dollars of rent every month. They are head and shoulders bigger in terms of rent dollars than any other tenant at the Johnson County Airport.
So money, people will bury their conscience or because of that, yeah.
I think that's part of it. It's also true that the publicly acknowledged officers of Aero Contractors are prominent local citizens.
Mm.
One of them is a prominent attorney in Smithfield.
Mm-hmm.
And has been in that community for years. So these are pillars of their community. They are deacons in their churches. They are well integrated into the social fabric of Smithfield. Pilots live in communities in Johnston County. They know their neighbors. They go to church. They have ties and relationships. They all patronize businesses in downtown Smithfield, which is a stone's throw from the airport. So Arrow has deep roots in that community. And a lot of people, when challenged about the human rights abuses, the detainees shackled to the floor of the plane, taken to be tortured, will say they've been keeping us safe. They need to rationalize somehow how it's been okay all these years, right? So they've been keeping us safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the main theme ever since 9/11 has been fear.
Right.
I just kind of getting to the point of saying, okay, we know that you're afraid. You're supposedly the biggest, strongest, baddest country on the planet. Why can't you get over your fear and stand up straight?
Be the American we thought we were.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely crucial. I think it's important to confront that fear directly and to talk about whether torture and human rights violations that are systematic like this have actually made us safer.
Right.
Most interrogators who are trained in the art, so to speak, will tell you that torture doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually produce reliable information. You alluded to this earlier. Rapport building techniques are generally accepted to be better ways of getting true information. Torture is a good way of getting false information in order to make the torture stop.
Mm-hmm.
And there are cases of that where Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, for example, was a CIA detainee who was tortured so badly that he revealed a bunch of false information, which was then used to justify the invasion of Iraq by the United States. So the whole weapons of mass destruction fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
So if people think that torture is keeping us safe, they need to understand that torture actually endangers us in many ways by leading investigators on wild goose chases and by helping to steer the country toward policies of war, intervention, and invasion, which are actually not good for our population, certainly not good for the veterans in our community.
And you need to think about the fact that you're all worried about the fact that they're going to come over here and attack us here. Well, if we weren't bothering them, they wouldn't have any reason to bother us.
And the well-known abuses at Abu Ghraib, the sexual humiliation, the torture with dogs and stuff, the continued detention of people at Guantanamo Bay, many of whom are said to have to stay there forever because the United States will never let them go, it says. These are flashpoints in the eyes of people around the world.
Absolutely.
People hate the United States for those violations, and there is a small number of people who are motivated to take up arms against the United States exactly because of their anger about those.
Well, the hypocrisy, you know, when we keep saying we want to spread democracy. And I mean, every time I hear us talk and you know what's going on, the world knows what's going on. It is just so embarrassing, you know. I want to get back before our time runs out, though, to this movement you were talking about for this investigative commission. So this is a new thing that you've been working behind the scenes for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. People can read more about that and other initiatives that we have at our website, which is www.ncstoptorturenow.org, or just Google North Carolina Stop Torture Now. This is an initiative that has grown up out of the knowledge that we in North Carolina have a particular connection to this issue of CIA torture, right? We have this CIA airline here in our backyard. That motivates us to need to do something about it, but it also gives us an opportunity in a way to have a kind of creative, innovative experiment in torture accountability. So we can do that at the county and state level and be kind of a microcosm of the process that the whole country needs to undertake, which is one of self-examination. It's one of asking elected officials, what did you know and when did you know it? I mean, obviously we can't subpoena anyone, A non-governmental commission doesn't have that power. It's not like convening a grand jury. And it doesn't replace formal government action, but it can be a spur to government mm-hmm. action. It can lay the groundwork. It mm-hmm. can come out with an authoritative report mm-hmm. and a set of recommendations mm-hmm. that the media will pay attention to. Mm-hmm. So that's the idea.
Well, it's just like they say, to take something to court, you have to have standing. It has to be where it's personally affected you. And so we in North Carolina have standing, and that it's happened here on our state. Our state officials have been in collusion, have been part of it. Even though the alarm has been raised, people have brought up the whole human rights violation. It's been ignored. So we have a lot of standing to say, hey, we want to not let this just drop. We want to really move forward, different than the president wants to move forward. We want to try to have there be some accountability, some acknowledgement, because we want this to never happen again, you know?
That's right. And there's one more aspect to our standing that needs to be mentioned, and that's that Senator Richard Burr has ascended to the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee starting early January when the Republicans took over the Senate. Senator Burr went from being just a member of Senate Intelligence to being the head of it. So he replaced Senator Dianne Feinstein from California, and she was the one who spearheaded the writing of the Senate torture report.
Well, I was going to say that is one politician, and she, I believe, would have had some support from some of her colleagues, but she was like a little bulldog with that. She would not let go of that, and she brought out when they were bugging the Senate, you know, staff. I mean, there's other things she's done or has been for or against that I have disagreed with her, many. But this was one case where, considering the record of the others, she was a pretty shining example.
She withstood a lot of pressure, not only from the CIA and from the Bush officials and from the Republicans on her committee, but also from the White House. Because the White House, instead of brokering a deal between the Senate Intelligence Committee and the CIA over what parts of the report would be redacted and what parts would be released, sided with the CIA and made it very difficult for Feinstein to even get the thing released at all, which happened in December. No sooner did he come in to her slot when Senator Burr said, I want all the copies of the full report back from all branches of the executive government, the State Department, the Justice Department, the FBI, the White House. We need all of your copies of the full 7,000-page report back here because we're concerned that at some point in the future a Freedom of Information Act request might get that whole thing released, right? So if we can declare it a committee document and not an executive document, then a congressional committee is not subject to FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. So that would protect the full 7,000 pages from ever being released. This is in the hands of a federal judge right now because the American Civil Liberties Union sued about it. We're waiting to see how that's resolved.
Where's Daniel Ellsberg when we need him again?
Right. We hoped for a while that there might be someone who would be courageous and just reveal the entire 7,000 pages.
Yeah. Wasn't it Ron Wyden?
Could still happen.
Wasn't it Ron Wyden that was being pressured to, since he's a senator from wherever and he was retiring?
No, Ron Wyden is still there. He's from Oregon. No, it was the guy from Colorado.
Udall.
Okay. Mark Udall. And he lost his bid for reelection. So, yeah, there was some hope that after that he would go ahead and release the full report, but he chose not to do that. No, I mean, I think we want that because it's quite possible that the full 7,000 pages would contain some information about North Carolina's involvement via Aero Contractors, which is involved in – we know of 34 detainees whose cases are well documented who were transported for torture by Aero Contractors out of Smithfield or Kinston, where they also had a hangar for a while.
Just ignore that.
At least 18 of them – appear in the Senate report, but there's no explicit words North Carolina in the part of the report that was released. It doesn't explicitly say Arrow Contractors in the part that was released. We'd like to know if somewhere those words about North Carolina are in the full 7,000-page report.
Yeah. Well, I hope somebody's not ready to be so heroic. I hope somebody's sitting in some basement somewhere copying all of those 7,000 pages before. I mean, how is Burr going to know if, you know, somebody should be smart enough to be copying it and have a secret copy, you know, and then find somebody who's got a few guts around Washington to release it. But even if they're not ready to do it, how would they know if it was copied?
Yeah, I mean, you can envision various scenarios, right? The truth is that you have to be careful because there are protections for Congress members to release documents like that would not necessarily apply to staff or some other person.
So some congressman's got to get – yeah, so what about Wyden? Can we put pressure on him?
I don't think that's realistic. Yeah. He wants to stay on that committee, and I'm sure he would get kicked off if he did that. But I think it's important – for Senator Burr to keep hearing from constituents that they haven't forgotten about this issue and they want the full report. And we want the internal CIA review of its own rendition, detention, and interrogation program, which was called the Panetta Review. Remember Leon Panetta?
Yes.
He did an internal review several years ago, which also reached very negative conclusions about the torture program. And when the Senate came and did its review of that same program, the CIA said, no, you're wrong. It was a great program. It revealed all this vital intelligence. It got us Osama bin Laden, defended it up one side and down the other. Well, their internal review had said something very different, but they didn't want to release that. So the other thing Senator Burr needs to hear from constituents is we want that Panetta review out. The American people deserve to know what the CIA's honest, genuine assessment of its program was, which was that it was ineffective and brutal.
So Burr,
we're told.
Burr has said to all of them, send me that report. Has that all happened, or can they drag the thing?
No, it hasn't happened yet. But Obama has said, in principle, he agrees with Burr that it's a committee document. And the only thing that apparently is keeping Obama from complying and sending back all the copies of the 7,000-page report is this federal judge's hearing the CIA, the ACLU's lawsuit. But as of about a month ago, the FBI had not even picked up their copy of the full report. The State Department hadn't opened their copy. All of them were still clapping their hands over their eyes, ears, and mouths, saying, we don't want to know anything about this, right? So that's the ethos in the federal government right now.
Well, we're about 2 minutes from the end of the show, so... Are there things that you haven't told us that you'd like to slip in real quick?
Yes. This idea that people need an apology. So we have a petition for an apology to one of the survivors of CIA rendition who's not even in the Senate report, so not even that shred of acknowledgement. His name is Britel, Abu El Qasim Britel, Britel. If you go to our website, North Carolina Stop Torture Now, you can find a link that says apologize, and you can get to an electronic petition at change.org where you can call upon the government of the U.S. and the three other governments that colluded in his torture to apologize to him. We'd really like for people to go and sign that because he tracks that from his home in Italy, and he knows whether there are more signatures on that petition now than there were last week or last month. It means so much to him to know that his case is not forgotten.
So that's one thing people can go and go on your website and sign that petition electronically. The other thing is to get in touch with Senator Burr.
That's also at our website. There's a link on the homepage for how to do that.
And tell him that we want transparency. We want to have that 7,000 available pages available. Mm-hmm. So that's two things. You can go on your website and find out anything else that's going on to inform yourself. Is there any particular – and then to keep paying attention to this, that you're working with other groups – mm-hmm. to get a North Carolina non-governmental investigative commission.
You can go on our website and get a link to that commission of inquiry, and you can endorse it and join the over 1,100 other people who have endorsed it already.
Okay, so we can endorse that. Wow, so there's all kinds of wonderful things that I hope our listeners are paying attention. Yeah. And if you're getting mixed up and haven't written stuff down, go to the website.
Christina Cowger from Stop Torture Now of North Carolina.
Yeah, North Carolina Stop Torture Now is what you
Google. That's correct. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you.